Welcome back to the Electrify podcast, brought to you by the creators of Electrify Expo, North America's largest EV festival coming to a major city near you. We are live with the mustache in the building. We are with the mustacheless one, that is Matt Chargeway, joining us once again. And this is a special guest. He calls himself the resident nerd, but I think that's going to feed into just his knowledge of combustion, going into EV, all these things. Sean Ackley, what is your proper title, though? Join us from VinFast, by the way.
Thanks. Yeah, no, I'm the head of charging and energy here in the U.S. for VinFast. So that really is just, it's a big title to mean a lot of things, but wherever the electron goes into the car and is part of the customer experience, that sort of folds into my responsibility here. And really, the core focus is just simplifying charging. It's probably the most cumbersome thing when it comes to EV ownership right now. So I get the wonderful, yet the difficult task to figure out how to simplify that.
It's something like,
it's always a broken record, right? It's always a topic. Matt, go. Just unleash the hounds on this mustache gentleman right now. Go ahead. Right. You got to watch the video because this mustache is regal.
I was going to say, if you're only listening right now, you are missing out.
Well, it's kind of a progressional chart. It's like, you know, I'm looking left to right. Matt has no hair. Sean's got a mustache. And I look like, you know, I'm bootleg Jason Momoa. You know, I'm Jared Mimosa. Yeah. I'm in that one movie called Aquaman. So anyways.
It's like, how long have each of us spent indoors in succession without seeing sunlight? It just moves from like, I went outside yesterday to I have been in the recording studio for a month and I haven't left.
Yeah. I'm going golfing right after this, Sean. I'm going to be quite honest.
All right. Good.
No, but that we have a lot of fun with this podcast. You've been in the EV space for, what is it, 7 years? What's that, longer than that?
Almost 7 years. Yeah.
Okay, so what's the biggest thing that you're excited about working at VinFast? Because we have had previous guests that talk about, you know, the big three, big manufacturers kind of missing this opportunity in this boat. And secretly over in Asia, these companies and manufacturers and vehicles are being developed. What are you most excited about the opportunity of having this platform and this vehicle that's called VinFast?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm a car nerd. I'm a EV zealot, right? And I want everyone to access this technology. And I think one of the struggles that we've seen in the early transition, early adopter days, is there was a lot of great offerings in the marketplace that really served one end of the market, right? And so EV attainability for everybody isn't really true when you look at the majority of the portfolios that are out there today. It's a higher end market. You have to be a little bit more affluent to really experience charging in a healthy way without screaming about it. You have to have a garage and a wall charger, right? So how we solve some of that problem where we need to sort of get over the hump and get the mass adoption to start happening with the average consumer who finds this technology a little bit scary, a little out of reach. Working at VinFast, we get to see a portfolio that now is, with some of the announcements we made this week, starting with a concept that we've called the VF3, it's sort of a mini SUV serving a lower price point segment. We have a portfolio now that can sort of run the gamut, but it's not just cool, have a lower priced EV. That's not the only solution here. So the other thing is the complexity. The complexity in charging is kind of the world I live in, but there is an ethos here about making it all more reasonable, more simplified, more attainable through user interface simplification. But with charging, I have focused on building out a very large network through partnership, but not making it difficult for someone to have to understand what a kilowatt hour is and what a battery charging curve is and what's a rack rate versus a time of use demand rate. Like, I don't want customers to have to know that if you're going to be a mass adopter or a late adopter. I want you to just get in and drive. And so building out that ecosystem and working at VinFast, they have this ethos that I really want to lean into and say, yeah, let's make that simple in any way possible, rather than focusing on making it the nerdiest thing. Even though I'll nerd out about it, let's not make bar charts and pie graphs on HMI screens in the car. It'll just scare people off, I think.
Oh, come on, Sean. People love that stuff. That's,
well, we might
enter the nerd, Matt, yeah, the Bowser of the internet EV world.
Well, I think you framed it up really well. Is at the end of the day that the focus of making it easy has to be core to what is your strategy. And I think it's interesting. So I don't think a lot of people yet know the specifics and specs, kind of getting to what you described about the product portfolio, what you guys have brought to market and announced this week, for example. I'm curious, can you kind of walk through some more details for listeners and viewers about what does the VF3 offer from a just an offering perspective with regard to price and performance and range, things like that. And then we can step into a little bit more onto the Wild, which obviously is a little bit wilder, but we'll kind of maybe take it in that cadence. Kind of like the mustache ratio here. We'll go from like entry to wild.
Fair enough. You know, we don't have all specs out there, so I can't get into the decimal points with a lot of things. Right. But I think at a high level, starting with the VF3, you've got a mini SUV, which will have certainly a shorter range, a smaller battery, but that helps optimize that entry-level price point. So we have announced that it's going to be targeted in the $20,000 range, which is exciting.
Yeah, wow.
Name how many EVs still today are on the market being produced new that are in that price range. There's
without rebates, you can't really get there.
Yeah, subsidy. There's nothing. So we're excited by that. And I think not just excited that there is something at that spectrum. There is also the announcement we've made. We're moving to a hybrid sales model as a company, and we are signing our first third-party franchise dealers in the U.S. And I'm based out of Raleigh, North Carolina. Our first dealer is in Raleigh, North Carolina, which is exciting. And all the dealer feedback is, yes, we could sell that. People want this. They're looking for this. And if we're looking to get more people into EVs, you can't not have something on that side of the spectrum. But you wanted a little bit more on spec. So it's a smaller wheelbase. I don't know that we put out sort of the wheelbase and track width of this vehicle yet. Still in concept, but moving through its production design phase. Smaller battery, but it is a mini SUV. This is going to be a metropolitan city car. This is maybe a lifestyle choice for a beach house. You keep a car at the beach house, maybe. It's going to be
in university camp. It is absolutely totes adorbs. I'm looking at images right now, and it's a Car and Driver has an article here, and they're saying that it's a full 17 inches shorter than the Fiat 500e that goes on sale this year. And you're saying it's targeting 125 mile driving range, and I mean the colorways, interior. I mean it's such a solution. It feels just like it's filling that void. That is unique. It's stylistic. I mean, it reminds me of a Scion IQ, if anybody knows that vehicle. Kind of looks like that. I don't know. Matt, chime in here.
And it's interesting. IQ is as a comparable example of just what is that vehicle designed for? What is it used for? And I think even the idea of what the VF3 can be is we're looking at, we've had EVs that have the range of 125, 150 miles of range before, but the price points, because of when the technology came out, was not $20,000. It was double that or more potentially. So I think this really speaks to even like the beach house concept or that second vehicle. I think that's part of what we discuss a lot of times in the industry is you can have, if you have the luxury of having a house where you can charge at night, you have the ability to have a vehicle like this that can do the vast majority of your routine stuff. And then if you have another vehicle that you want to do for long range, you can totally have that as an example. But the amount of times that I've had experiences with friends that have not understood like how to get into EVs, and they've just kind of dipped their toe in by doing something basic. This is the idea that I think that you're speaking to, Sean, is that that's where a lot of what we talk about so often in the industry is it gets expensive. We do talk range all the time, but when that price gets out of whack, people can't even look at it seriously. They say, I'll go look at it at a car show, sure, but I can't really realistically say I'm going to buy this unless it's used 5 years from now. And I think you guys are pointing to addressing that.
But even if you acknowledge that sort of like to get you into EV as someone who's maybe not been curious or maybe been put off by some of the technology or put off by some of the attainability and some of the products that have served at the higher end of the market, it doesn't mean that these consumers are static. They're not just one thing. They grow as they get to know this technology. So it's important as an OEM to provide something to get them in, get them comfortable. And they will grow. They're going to eventually want to unlock the HMI screen with the battery charging curves on it. And they're going to want to see how many, what's the vehicle requested amperage and voltage coming out of the charger. And I'm going to match that up against the HMI screen. Like they're going to want to do that, but you can't expect out of the box that all of them are going to want to know that.
It's like trying to teach calculus to sixth graders. It's like, what are we doing?
Hey, calculus to adults. What are you talking about here?
That's fair. Yeah.
I'm feeling really... Yeah, I'm feeling really triggered here, Matt. Sean, I'll joke aside. Where are you right now? You know, for those that hear a little bit, sounds like you're at a rave right now. I know you are in Vegas, but are you at EDC or are you at another acronym?
No, I'm at another acronym. I'm at the big one. I'm at CES today. And I've been here since Monday. I got in the afternoon. Actually, it was kind of funny. We're going to talk about the rest of the cars that are behind me here, the vehicles that are behind me here. But My team is wonderful. This is an exciting group. VinFast is constantly, we constantly say we move VinFast. Everything's constantly in flux about what we're doing tomorrow. What are we working on together? And CES is no different. I get a message from our global leadership on Sunday night, like, hey, did you get your script? I said, my script? I'm going to meet vendors and talk with partners and, you know, have a nice, slow, easy week. They go, no. You got to unveil all these cars and all this technology. I'm like, oh, do I have to shave my mustache?
First concern.
He's been nurturing. He's been nurturing this for Christmas Day, and he debuted it and all this. All joking aside, you bring up a great topic, VinFast, and thinking about the consumer that's going to buy this car, the culture and that consumer. And I feel like this, you know, this all new model, you're talking about this eensy weensy SUV, as Car and Driver describes it, the VF3. I feel like it's this hackable, like, computer. Like, it's this whole thing. But also, I want to talk about the culture of VinFast. And you specifically, prior to us hitting record, you're like, I'm a car guy. We could talk about IMSA. We could talk about LMS, like, you know, Le Mans. We could talk about. So that culture and that shift going to VinFast, going into EV. And I've experienced this with motorcycles. I've done stuff with Harley Davidson and the introduction of what was the Harley Davidson Livewire. Now it's just their independent brand called Livewire. Right. And I've been with purists that are, you know, panhead, flathead, like just they're, you know, big V-twin guys, and they've driven a Livewire and they're like, dude, it's the most fun I've had on a motorcycle in a long time. So you being kind of this combustion race car guy with the dope mustache, how do you, you know, translate into and create that excitement for being quote unquote VinFast?
Oh yeah. Oh, we'll start. Let's start with just the culture of EV and that sort of that mentality of like, well, it's not that, like, it's not cool. Like, when you are into cars and into auto racing and into everything that comes with the origin story of petrol powered racing, there's a lot of this misnomer that, like, well, EV takes away some of the romanticism. It sort of takes away from that, but no, these things are fast. There's just like instant torque. Now, we can also talk about how far we are away from seeing the world's first 24-hour Le Mans electric powered, right? Like, no, we know where we are in this evolution. And motorsport has a great continued future in requiring liquid fuel. I mean, and that's perfectly fine. That's not the reason why we have to go and save the planet because we have too much. It's the second largest GHG emitter being global transport. It's not because there's a couple of cars spinning around a racetrack.
I mean, yeah, it's not because of motorsports. Yeah.
No, we can still have a little fun, but we can be conscientious and we can look towards the future, and the future still is fast with electric, and it's faster. And so electric mobility is cool still to me as someone who still has an LSA powered Cadillac in the garage, but also has six EVs out in the driveway that I'm constantly testing and endear every moment I spend behind the wheel driving those just as much. And the other thing I would say, like, there's some cool stuff happening just even in, you know, what I call the Skunkworks redneck backyard type of laboratory, where I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. I have a backyard workshop that's got a steel roof on it. And I am taking apart one of my old HPDE instructor cars and putting an electric powertrain in it. So there's still Love fun it. To be had in both worlds. Absolutely. Oh, well, and what we're doing here, I could go on and on, but maybe I'll take a breath.
No, please, Matt, go ahead.
Well, I think what you're speaking to is at the end of the day, you know, the mentality of motorsports, the mentality of even tinkering and all that. We've talked about that a few times on previous episodes where it's alive and well. You know, it's going to be something that translates well. And I'm excited to see how people that have a background in motorsports are going to really get their hands dirty in the EV side of the conversation. And we have things that will come to market that you can use for everyday driving. But when we really start the tinkering, we really start getting into how far can I take this thing? And as you described, the petrol powered car aspect of things, that's still going to be a part of motorsports, you know, for years and decades to come. But the aspect of where EV can go, if it is a pure electric in Le Mans or something like that, the speed and all those other things that come along with it, we're the beginning of this conversation, and we talk about it all the time on the show. Is this is just getting fresh with people that don't know what they don't know. But then things like CES, where it used to just be purely just, okay, we're talking tech and refrigerators and washing machines and mobile devices. I mean, back in the day when Pioneer used to have like the biggest activation at CES, but now all of a sudden you're standing there as an OEM saying, but the reality of it is the blending of not just the crossover of tech, but also potentially what is that motorsport or that fun factor look like? And I guess, is that what you see the Wild is for VinFast? Is it kind of getting into that place where it's like that extreme off-road type of approach? Or how do you guys view that product in that discussion?
Well, I mean, I won't go out of my way to say that I can sort of convey all that the Wild is to a consumer base that has yet to really get their hands on it. It's still a concept. But in concept, with the North American market, is where you sell pickup trucks. And the pickup truck, it means a lot to different people. It's it can be utilitarian. It can be just how I do day-to-day activity in rural America. It can be how I go get groceries, and it's just a lifestyle choice. So there is so much about car culture that is not what I need. It's what I want. Right.
Oh God. So it's all about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And far be it from us to say you don't get what you want. But we also have some things for folks that want something different. That's the important thing about it. The Wild can go for the outdoors, the utilitarian, the hunter, woodsman, the person who wants to go off-roading. It can also go for someone who just wants to do city driving, but also have a big tailgate that folds down. We have a powered lift gate in that mid gate that folds down and extends from 5 to 8 feet. That's a pretty cool, both worlds that can straddle as a product.
So
the Wild, you said it extends from 5 feet to 8 feet
with a powered mid gate. So fold down, like rear seat mid gate pass through.
Got
it. So click of a button, the whole thing folds down. And
Jared's like, that wheelbase is going to go. All the wheelbase not on the VF3 is attached to the end of the Wild. No, it's like, no. That's not
Man, we're not into Transformers quite yet. Give us some time, guys.
So close.
Yeah.
Well, I guess how does that then, again, as you mentioned, culture and automotive culture and everything we see here in the States, especially, it is so much so about the I want and how brands that have been traditional truck brands. For example, it took Toyota a long time to get their feet planted in the truck space with Tundra and Tacoma even. Is that took them a long time. Where do you see the Wild's going to fit into that conversation? Is it less about traditional truck buyers, or is it more about the type of buyer that might be looking at something like, an R1T from Rivian? Is that the kind of buyer you're thinking is going to be attracted to what you guys have produced, or rather conceptually shown and what you'll produce?
Yeah, wonderful question. I'm the charging guy. Like, I may not have the answers to why someone will choose one thing over another, but we want to make sure that we have, again, going back to the widest net we can cast to make sure that we're not leaving anyone out. So someone that wants a truck but is curious about how they might enter EV differently through a VinFast ecosystem than that of any of those other brands that you mentioned, we want to make sure that we offer something for them. So it's exciting to make the announcement. It's a gorgeous design. I mean, it's getting a lot of great buzz and feedback that we've been seeing so far. So nothing short of something wonderful to look at. Now, as we mature and continue from concept into sort of a design and production roadmap planning, of course, we want to continue to see what does the American buyer and North American buyer continue to want in things like range. What do they want in price point? What do they want in features? And what do they want in the ownership experience? And that will continue to mold a truck that looks wonderful now, but will probably still continue to evolve as that market tells us what it's looking for out of a new brand in the market.
Yeah, and those vehicles, I'm, you talk about truck, you talk about the R1T, you talk about the Lightning. This is just another whole segment, because I'm looking at the Hyundai Santa Cruz, the Ford Maverick. That's this kind of fusion vehicle that even the Honda Ridgeline kind of opened people's eyes to, of like, it's this fusion kind of car, not to mention the fusion as a vehicle, but I'm just saying this kind of amalgamation of a concept of a vehicle that serves a purpose. And again, it always goes back to solution. What problem are you trying to solve? Okay, well, if you're driving long range, maybe this isn't the right solution. This isn't the right tool for the job. But what I'm seeing here with, again, the Wild, I'm wildly, no pun intended, intrigued. But also, again, this VF3, I could see my mom having one of these,
And don't forget, like, someone younger with maybe whenever pricing comes out on a certain particular vehicle, and you can apply this probably to any OEM, right? You have the poster on your wall of the car you want.
The Halo car,
What car can I get? And I'll get there. Like, I have a long road ahead of me of owning a whole bunch of cars. I'll get there. But this gives me my exposure. And that's, again, I keep coming back to this point, but it's casting that wide net, allowing someone to come in and grow with us through the portfolio.
That's great. And that, right. Yeah. That's us having Civics, or, you know, Matt having his Dodge Stratus or whatever he had back
Stratus
in the day.
Bro, I had a Cavalier.
Sorry, I mean, Cavalier.
I don't know if that's, yeah.
I drive a Dodge Stratus. Sorry. Go, another Will Ferrell quote, by the way. So, I'm in a glass box of emotion here. Okay. I'm not even mad. I'm actually impressed.
Yeah.
stay classy, VinFast. Sorry. Just pulling them all out here for, old Sean Burgundy. But you are right, because I was a Honda guy, so the NSX was aspirational, right? And now even the NSX is aspirational. But that I really love this, and I will quote you or give you kudos. Congratulations, VinFast, for actually having the numbers in a row. The 3, 5, 7, 9. BMW just grenaded that. We're all good. And then they're like, wait, the odd numbers are 4 doors, 2. I don't even know anymore.
Is that what they still say?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. All joking aside, the VinFast culture is really enticing. And here comes something from Vietnam, this startup, you know, and again, we haven't even cut into the biggest topic in the room. We're talking about the big, shiny jewelry, cool, new, but the infrastructure that VinFast is playing. And this is where Matt and you are just going to go on this tangent of these, you know, tangents, literally, of the infrastructure and the power and providing the web, the ecosystem of it all, not just the fish, man. There's so much to be said here.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Oh, sorry. Yeah. No, you start.
You go. No, I think that what's interesting about all of this is it always packages a lot of different pieces about how interesting the automotive culture is in North America and the US in general. On one hand, you have a brand new brand that's coming in, and you have to solidify what that brand will mean. You know, as from a storytelling perspective, from an image perspective, what is that conveying to the buying public? What will they get out of being associated with that brand? But then it's not just about that. The role that you're playing at VinFast as it relates to true user experience, as it relates to energy, as it relates to charging, and how fundamental that is to the ownership experience of an EV. Again, we've haven't really talked about this a lot in previous shows, but the whole NACS conversion, everybody going to the NACS connector and all that happening here in North America. And again, everybody for the most part has effectively jumped in at this point, but it's to one extent, I'm excited about that because it's an elegant solution when it comes to the physical experience of plugging in, whether it's at home or away from home, but there's still a lot to unpack with how the experience looks for where are you connecting and how does that impact your charging experience based on what experience you're having, whether it's at home or on a road trip, et cetera. But walk us through a little bit of the methodologies that VinFast and what you're leading on the teams that you have there for how you're approaching not just the fact that you can connect, but what is that overall experience? You'd mentioned trying to simplify. Like, what are some examples of where you guys are really wanting to lead the charge on that?
Yeah, okay. Well, we also recognize where we are. We can't go out and just build our own network, right? So we started in my time here, very excited by what the team had already been working on before my time joining. But it was through partnership, integrating all of those CPOs that had already started to deploy infrastructure and build out the networks that exist today through an OCPI connection. So you got a cloud-based connectivity where you can start and stop charging as a VinFast customer on those networks seamlessly without having to download other apps. And I think I've said this before, and you guys have maybe heard me. I pontificated all the time. They're wonderful apps, each and every one of them. I love them. I just don't want all of them. And I don't want my customers to have all of them. But those networks that you've deployed as CPOs, we want to support you and you support EV ownership. So let's work together mutually here. So stitch together this quilt of all the woven together CPO networks, providing access to customers seamlessly, one app, one payment management system. And in some day where we're targeting things on the roadmap, like plug and charge and intranetwork and internetwork roaming agreements and direct contracting that we have with the CPO partners, making it so that you don't have to think about, do I charge here today or there tomorrow, or what's along my route that's in my plan that I need to focus on? Just go and charge. And there's so much more to come when you've started to build that foundation of an integrated network as the OEM, being able to do all of that start, stop, and payment management for customers. There's things you can unlock for customers long-term that all you have to do is just change the way you commercially model that as a partner to your customers. All these customers, as we scale as a business, are a huge forecastable energy draw. And that is something that is very powerful as an OEM to go and negotiate on behalf of our customers with those partner groups to say, you have to sell energy. I can promise you how much I'm going to be bringing to this region, to this pocket, to this area, sure. because I know exactly where those cars were sold and where they're driving. So,
the Vita X conversation is what you just alluded to, is something that is the promise of, you know, effectively stationary storage, but it is on wheels, right?
It's the idea. I wasn't, but that's also an interesting area. I was just alluding to sort of like forecastable energy retailing behind the meter.
Gotcha. For pricing. Okay, I gotcha. Yeah.
So there's a rack rate. There's a subsidized rate. Well, what kind of subsidies can we unlock when you, as a CPO, know exactly how much energy you get to sell tomorrow? And I'll work with my customers to know where they're using charging stations in their neighborhoods or on their routes and in their places of employ. And let's work together. And in that, there's so much more we can do, not just the monetary side of lifting mm-hmm. all boats here. Working with CPOs, we all know their struggle with reliability and uptime, yeah. serviceability. We can provide real-time feedback. Where is interoperability poor? With working with some charging types in our vehicles, and can we provide that feedback in real time? Where is user feedback coming through our customer support channels and our dealer channel partners telling us this charging station is down, or this POI data is off by a whole city block and they keep arriving at the wrong point? Like, we can
that always feedback. Blows my mind when there's a geo pin that is legit like nowhere close to where that thing is. Yeah. That's always
That impacts user adoption, all that stuff. So not only are we trying to do something to simplify and get a customer into a car, but we want to continue to improve it for all EV owners. We're a member of this ecosystem. So let's continue to improve, because that will ultimately serve all of us trying to proliferate EV adoption.
Yeah. And you've said the word ecosystem multiple times, and that's the point, is it is an ecosystem. And I think we're seeing a lot of news even lately, you know, things like Hertz saying that they're getting rid of EVs from their fleet and they're going to be going back to, you know, getting more gas cars because people didn't know how to rent and drive them and they were causing them issues. I think what you're pointing to is a fundamental piece of understanding for it. It's an ecosystem. It truly is a unique ecosystem compared to the previous car ecosystem that we've all known for a long time. And I think that having that as a footprint and a foundational jumping off point for what your strategy can look like is fundamental in the EV space. If you don't understand that the fact that it is an ecosystem, you are going to be being reactive and not proactive. So I think everything you're pointing to is great to hear that that's part of what strategically you're thinking about on behalf of VinFast customers. That's going to be a big deal in the long run, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that.
And talking more about VinFast and back to the shiny stuff, because again, you guys are at CES, which is, you know, obviously the, you know, 2024, it's crazy just to think where we're at. You know, the whole world is shut down just not too long ago. Right. And here we are celebrating, you know, technology things. And, you know, a lot of people have been in the Beat Laboratory just banging away. And here we are showcasing some things. Can you show us anything behind us? I mean, for those that are watching the video, can we pan over?
How about I just like move out of the way for a second?
Yeah.
So what's behind me here is actually something pretty exciting. We have partnered with Sony and they have a RideView service, which is a streaming service that can be in-car video, movie, TV show sort of streaming service. And you might think to yourself, well, when is someone going to be watching a movie while they're driving an EV? Of course not. It's stationary. You can send movies to the back and your kids in the back. Of course, the classic, like, keep the kids entertained while you're driving sort of service is fantastic. But for me, as the charging nerd, I have spent so much time at charging stations where there's no amenities. Yeah. And I'm not there to go shopping. I'm there to get a charge. Or most of the time I'm out doing testing, so I can't just leave the vehicle. What do I do? Yeah. What am I going to do while I'm sitting here for 30 minutes? Why not watch a show? Why not watch a movie? Or at least do something to engage and continue to engage with the vehicle while you're waiting for a charge. Now that solves maybe an entertainment problem for today that may not exist as charging speeds increase and reliability improves and more charging happens elsewhere and it's more like nodal and waypoint charging. But it's certainly prescient. It's in the moment where we're dealing with that. And I think users getting that service is something that they're going to really enjoy while they're dealing with something that's still kind of in its inception, a little painful. That's charging.
You brought something up as you're describing that and kind of just the, you know, the user experience description of what that looks like and how it's kind of a in the moment type response, but it will be useful for years to come. It might change over time as technology improves. It makes me think of the comment you made earlier about the fact that you're doing a hybrid model for your selling process for working with traditional dealers and also maybe doing, you know, direct to consumer. A lot of what you described, obviously, that's going to end up being translated to a dealership. And we hear already that there's a lot of dealers that are just saying, we just don't have enough good info to jump from to make a sale, close a sale, discuss the sale. So as I was hearing you describe that, it made me think of that. Is how is that being translated in the efforts you're making to work with third party or, you know, traditional auto dealers? And how is that going to then turn into a buying experience in a way that they can translate those value propositions? Like what efforts have been made there and how's that going?
Well, first off, I mean, sales training and then customer education go hand in hand more than it ever has been. Your customer coming in to look at an EV, you can't just assume like you could that they knew everything about working a gas pump.
Right.
You could just assume that. Like a dealer today doesn't have to go, do you know how to select gas and put it in the, you don't have
never
to
bring it up.
Throwaway, right? But now customer education is part of the sales process, not just the sale delivery. It's to close the sale. You have to get them comfortable with the idea that there is change coming. Yep. And that change is the is either through the complexity and changing your ownership and driving experience. That is the scary part that turns a lot of folks away. So sales training is almost as important as making sure that that sales training is customer education training. And you are now my conduit to do that. Direct consumer, it's the same thing. It's the same training collateral we put together for our own stores and our own sales associates. But we you're not just brand ambassadors. You're not just trying to close a sale. You are educating a consumer class that needs to learn from you. And you're right. Maybe there was some struggles early on as EV started to roll out from some of the other OEMs out there where dealers were either saying, hey, I didn't get enough, or I would consume more training if you can equip me with that. Yeah. Or just out of pure, I don't know what I don't know. I didn't know I needed some more training. I thought these things were easy to sell.
That's like, fair. That last point you made, I think, is really the fairness of it. Is I think that for the last decade or more, we've seen how the industry itself has discussed like how we need to do a better job of educating internally and then educating outbound into the public and also with other stakeholders. But I think what you just keyed on is important is, you know, people don't know what they don't know. It's not always that they have some sort of intent or they're being malicious. They're just coming from what they know, which is, do I have to learn something? Like, why do I have to learn something? I mean, that's the part where I think is giving some grace a little bit, but then they still do have to be motivated to want to learn. But again, if you're signing on these dealers and saying, look, we see that what the product you have is going to be something, price point, design, features, we know we can dive in on that. How you're describing it, it has to be coupled with not only the motivated sales, like the sales rep, but also that right information, you know?
Sure. And so like a infotainment service, a charging service, a 10-year warranty, a 24/7 roadside support entitlement that comes with the purchase experience. You don't just get to say the word and say it comes with it, but you figure it out. It's your job as the owner of the vehicle to read a digital manual and learn all this stuff and know who to engage. No, it's our jobs to say, like, it's cool tech and let me show you how to do it. Let me help you download the app. Let me help you install your user profile and link it to the car. Let me show you how to turn on the heated seats while you're inside making coffee before you get in the car in the morning. Let me demonstrate that for you as part of the delivery process. It's so important.
It's just such a shift overall. We've talked about this, Matt, with other guests about, you know, there's salespeople that will turn people off of an EV going in to educate themselves. But anybody listening to this podcast is one, eager to learn about VinFast and what this company is, this Vietnamese startup, this vehicle that's creating some waves, creating some new perspectives. It's going to be the smallest car, the one that, you know, again, the VF3, the smallest vehicle sold in North America. You know, so how exciting is that? I think that's a stance. That's saying something. But then that education piece of, again, I think I told you a story. My buddy got a car, you know, the rideshare program, Turo, had one, pulled up. We went golfing, came back. The car's dead. Oh. He didn't know, you know, but yeah, look at that thing. Totes adorbs. It's like a baby Jimny meets with like a Toyota FJ Cruiser.
Yeah, it's like an FJ got thrown in the dryer.
Yeah. Hot water and then shrank. But also, again, I think it's great. But I'm looking at the VF8. I mean, kudos to you. The model lineup is it's got continuity to it from the, you know, obviously from the 6, 7, 8, 9. Wild obviously throws a curveball, but it already denotes. So from a branding perspective, I get it. It makes sense. You know, you got range, you have this, you have that. Just going through the website, you guys do a good job of educating people. But it is frightening. It is scary. And you talked about, you know, how simplistic we go. We pump. We're, you know, creatures of habit. This will become habitual once it becomes habitual and doing the process and getting the right education. I mean, I don't know what phone you're using, if you're a green texter or a blue texter. I'm joking, but you know, we don't
always both. Always.
So, but we don't cut into half of the capabilities of what our iPhone or our Droid phone could do, right? I mean, we really, really don't. There's the intuitiveness and all this stuff. We're surrounded by technology we don't utilize. So with what you're building and what you're doing, I think it's rising tide lifts all ships. And anybody looking at EV, VinFast is an option. And that's what I'm most excited about is, you know, and we talked to, again, previous guests on how the big three and these other manufacturers are just getting left out in the cold. And it's yeah.
You know, VinFast, the beauty of, I think, what VinFast has coming to market is on one hand, it's a challenge because it's an unknown. It's also an unknown coming from outside the U.S. From a sake of like, where is this made? What's the story here? But also that clean slate provides opportunity to, because it's an EV platform, it's pure electric. That's what we're talking about. There's no confusion about what the fuel type is. Is it lends to that storytelling opportunity? There's no conflict. There's no having to convert your buying your consumer that you've had for a long time. Is you can have that fresh conversation. I think it's a challenge that brands that have had gas powered vehicles forever that are trying to translate what they offer now in electrification, that is a challenge for them. But to come in fresh and say, nope, we're electric. That's what we do. It's what we offer. And it's who we are at our core. There's a lot of positivity that comes along with that for what the product can end up being for that buying public that doesn't know what they don't know. And they learn that clearly. It's like, no, this is what these people do. This is their mission. And that, I think that helps a lot. I mean, again, Sean, you're the one on boots on the ground living that. I mean, I'm saying that anecdotally, but I think there's a value there. Is it true?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. So a couple of great points that you made in there, but I zoned in on one for a second. The idea that there's a little bit of a clean slate. Yeah, but sometimes a clean slate can be a double-edged sword. You know, we have to learn a lot as OEM. We're gonna continue. We're so committed to doing that. And that's a lot of announcements come out about continuous improvement of quality. We're listening. We're getting that feedback. We're putting that into development life cycle and the ownership life cycle of the vehicle. These things, EVs are cloud connected. This is the future of vehicle ownership. So continuous improvement over the air. That's something that I don't remember even thinking about 10 years ago, really.
Right.
In its true sense. Coming into this market and having to create a whole new tool suite to service, own, and maintain a vehicle. And now, not just for ourselves, but for partners. So I've been a long time in the power industry and infrastructure and outside the vehicle. And I'm so happy to be now working on the vehicle side of this industry. But I remember the shift that almost 7 years ago when I took the dive into e-mobility. And I remember I had worked in field service and construction and putting infrastructure in the ground and worked with a lot of field service persons. And I remember that was about the time when I started telling field service persons, your tool belt now has a laptop in it.
Yeah,
it's not just ohm meters. It's a laptop, guys. You have to plug into these things and engage with them, or remotely, you're going to be engaging with them. So it is not just something that I think we are enduring, but we have to do it completely from scratch. We have to figure out how to service these things with new tools, and we're not the big three. We don't have endless field of engineers that have been working on this for 30 years. So. We are excited by the clean slate, but we know that we've got to continue pressing forward and investing in that ownership experience over time.
Fair point.
Remember how revolutionary OnStar was, and it was like, wait, you could hit a button and talk to somebody?
Yeah.
That's insane. What? Yeah. You know, your phone notices you're about to die. You know, like, were you in a car crash? You know, and then like, but these are advancements that absolutely are essential with given the consumer. And I mean, Sean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, our previous guests, we're selling to teenagers now. We're selling to my 17-year-old son. That's, you know, and that mental shift that's going to happen. They don't know what cassettes are. They barely know what CDs are. And now they're going to be like, I need a VinStar, or I do need a Ford Lightning, or the new GM that,
because,
you know, that
guess
big
what?
Truck.
These things come with, I don't know, 400 horsepower and 400 foot pounds of torque right out of the box, you know, like that's, yep. Do you remember like high school? My first car maybe had 80 horsepower.
I gotta say, my Cavalier had more torque than horsepower. It was quite impressive.
Yeah, yeah. Is it red?
I painted it candy apple red. I mean, I was a walking cliche right into like that John Favreau moment in Swingers. He's like, which car is yours? Oh, the red Cavalier, right over there.
Yeah, I teed that one up for you there, bud. I don't know if you do. Obviously, I don't know if you picked up what I'm putting down.
I got you. Yeah. Can't fly business class.
Sean, I mean, you know, going back to your origin story of, you know, it was a cold night. No. But you're a combustion fan. You are a race car fan. Rising tide lifts all ships. What else excites you? You're at CES. You're seeing this other stuff and technology and mind sharing. And, you know, you're a car guy. Let's just call it what it is. Like you said, you got your combustion engine. You have your vehicle you're converting to an EV engine. What excites you being there at CES, or what excites you 24 and beyond?
Well, unfortunately, I haven't even had a chance to like go.
Ah, jeez.
Like, I've been strapped to this little booth area. That
get it.
He's got scripts taped all over him. You know, that's all he has, the scripts everywhere.
Yeah. Microphones coming out of nowhere. Like, hey, I need you to. I'm just saturated by new tech, and I'm hearing all the buzz. I'm seeing stuff online. I'm excited to see what's coming out there. But I think even what I'm seeing here, and I'm looking at the roadmap, there are so many things that are coming in ADAS technologies. You know, as someone who loves to drive, I also am a dad, and I also want to make sure that there are continuous improvements in safety technologies that are going to keep my family safe on long road trips. Vehicle-to-vehicle communications. There's a lot of things that are coming down the pike that are going to continue to make driving safer and safer while it's advancing and getting more technical. Yeah. That I'm excited about. ADAS technology is also from a creature comfort standpoint. I love to drive when I get to do it on a racetrack. If I'm not on a racetrack, I don't want to drive, you know? So it's if you're telling me
for those that don't know, what is ADAS technology?
So autonomous driving assistance type technologies that allow you to basically maintain lane, maintain its speed. And this is stuff that you're probably already exposed to in the level one category. This is cruise control, right? It's most simplistic form. But now you can maintain a gap between you and the vehicle in front of you. We have got we have these technologies, ADAS level two technologies, out of the box with every vehicle we sell right now in the U.S. and in North America, globally. The ability to maintain the lane you're in while cruising on the highway. I had just started with this company, and I had never engaged with ADAS technologies to this extreme before I joined here. I just had never owned a car, never really even leased or borrowed or borrowed a friend's car that had some of this technology equipped in it. And they had shipped a car out to DC. I was doing some testing with one of our CPO partners at a test lab, and they shipped a car out to Washington, D.C., and I flew up there, grabbed the car, did our testing, and then I drove it back to Raleigh. So I did the stint, and the only thing I was really excited about was, like, can I make it without having to stop and charge? What is that charging experience? Oh, what does this little button do? What's this thing? Oh, my gosh, the car is driving itself. What is this? And I just was floored and enjoyed every minute of that drive to Raleigh, just having to just sort of maintain a tacit control and awareness around me without having to fully engaged with the entire driving experience while I'm on I-95 and some of the most boring parts of that stretch. So no, it was very cool.
How you just described it is true. The moment you actually get to enjoy that on the highway, long drives, again, some people are road warriors. I want to drive for 600 miles and never stop, and I'll pee in a bottle or whatever. But most people aren't that. But if you can drive on the highway and have that, just that subtle support of how your vehicle is doing some of it for you, not all, but some, it really does create a less exhausting drive. I think that was the first thing I really noticed, is I got out of a long trip with a really good ADAS system. And I remember the first thing I had a conversation was with my brother, and he said, you don't even seem tired. He's like, normally you're like gassed when you get to like go visit him, which is like a 6-hour drive. I was like, yeah, I'm not. And it was because I wasn't as like having to strain around, just like, I gotta just focus all the time. The subtlety of the help is important. So.
Well, it was the perfect embodiment of what we were talking about at the beginning of this discussion. Like the easing into technology, start simple, make it, because it's a little scary. And for me, I'll admit, like, I've been around cars all my life, and I got into this and I saw the button, I started engaging it. I felt a little apprehensive, a little anxious. Sure. And it just trust the brand, trust the engineers behind it, but I had just never been exposed to it. And so it was late at night. There was no other cars on the road, and I decided to push the button then. I was like, well, what do I do if I screw something up?
What happens now?
I'm in the middle of the stretch between, like, rural Virginia and rural North Carolina, which is most of that trip anyway. And so I was just like, I'm awake, I'm alert, because I'm looking at everything. Like, did I push the right button? Did I push them all? And then I was just sort of, oh, I get it. All right, I'm comfortable with it. And that learning curve happened in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It didn't take me months of ownership and playing and dabbling. It happened in 30 minutes. And then I was comfortable with it. And from then on, I have always wanted to find stretches of road to engage it.
Well, and like how Jared pointed out about just saying, you know, we're selling to teenagers. Like, we've had those discussions around how are younger generations responding to some of this tech. They've actually had some pretty accommodating tech most of their lives. Whereas generationally speaking, the older you get, the more we've sort of all had to adapt to it over time. And it's a big deal when you're talking about a car that's going 70 miles an hour to what does that trust factor feel like? Whereas some kid might be like, I'll hit the button. Boop. You know, they're having it.
So, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And thank you for making me feel like the oldest millennial in the world, because you're right. I remember all of the every change that has occurred in my time. And now I get to watch my son engage cars. And my son is obsessed with cars. So I'm so excited to see him start to engage right at the precipice of new technology as he gets a little older here. And he won't have to know what a manual gear shift is and how to engage a clutch pedal.
He's missing out. That wasn't
I take it back. I'm going to make him. I'm going to be that old fuddy-duddy. I'm like, I saved an old car in the garage, and you're going to have to learn how. But you're not driving it to school because it's old and it's got antiquated safety technologies on it.
Okay, so really, how does Sean and Sean Jr.?
Yeah.
Sean Jr. is Will, and Will is 3.5 years old, and he's I don't know if you could tell from any of the pictures online. I'm getting a lot of fun reactions from folks. I'm 6'8". I'm a tall guy.
Oh, you're
taller. Bigger mustache than I thought.
You can't tell because the camera doesn't appear, you know. But standing next to any of these cars, of course, it's like, wow, that BF3 really is a small car. Look how small that is. And I'm like, how should I pick it up and show you? Can hand it around, pass it around. Everyone take a sniff. You know, like, my son is 3.5 and he's almost 4 feet tall. He's going to be a giant kid too. So now I'm like, well, what cars are built for tall people? And what are dad BF3. And son? BF3. I mean, I sit right down in these things, and it's kind of neat to see how you can. It can feel like a magic trick. Absolutely.
Yeah. You're like Hightower, an old school for all you, Gen X is out there. Yeah, that was a deep cut there for you. We can look up your age later, Sean, since you don't want to divulge it. It's fine. But back to VinStar and what you guys have. Or sorry, VinFast. I made the new model.
They're going to trademark that tomorrow.
the VinFast manufacturer. What is available, ready to buy, American soil? And where would they go? You talk about this selling strategy or your third partnership. What else? Where can we go?
Well, right now in market, on the ground, wheels on the ground, is our VF8 model. That's our first entrance to the market. Comes in two trims, Plus and an Eco. Plus gives you bigger alloy wheels, higher current output on the power module to the motor, and so it gives you that sport feel. It has a full panoramic moonroof, sunroof. So it's got a little higher end trim, and then you've got an Eco model, slightly lower price point, but it gives you longer range and a cushier ride. But a lot of amazing features all included in both trim levels right off the bat. And you can buy those as we start to progress into all contiguous 48 here. And then every province we can move into in Canada. There are going to be so many places for customers to go out to a showroom and engage the vehicles. We're all up and down in California now, all up and down the coastline. Canada, you can move from East Coast to West Coast and find a showroom and go find a product to engage. We have signed, as you've seen on in the news online, we're starting to sign our first dealers. We've got, I think it's over 120 applicants now. It's exciting to see how many dealers are interested in working with us. But yeah, it's going to be moving VinFast as we start to proliferate across the region here.
So on brand, and just looking at the specs of the VFA, just being transparent here, the leasing $399 a month, or excuse me, not leasing, but for 36 months, 264 mile range. You talk about, 0% APR. I mean, this is absolutely competitive. It's very intriguing. I just learned about VinFast, you know, as we're trying to book this interview, but it's got all the creature comforts that you would
anticipate. You didn't even look us up before we started? Come on, man.
I'm Jared Deenda. Like, you know, again, another Anchorman reference. Sorry. I'm the entertainment. I am the monkey. I dance. Matt, he's the space monkey. They shave him and they put him in
orbit. Yeah, it's just like I'm always like, give me the symbols, Jared. We have to stop. We have to actually just.
No, it's and again, this is it has to be fun at some point, you know, because cars are a sensory overload. The tactile feel of the steering wheel, the pedals, your engagement with the vehicle, or as you say, you know, the driver assist, like that is another tactile experience, like you said. You know, your stress goes down. And again, my wife has it in her BMW, and I utilize that. I have an old Tundra. It has just the right amount of technology. It's like a Nokia Razr phone. It's got numbers. It's got Snake on it. I'm good.
The jitterbug of yeah, let's go make some jitterbug EVs. I'm all about it. I love it. Good parallel. Exactly.
Yeah, it's the basic wild. It's where the wild things are. So, you know, but knowing and understanding about VinFast and what you guys have cooking, it's really exciting. And I think the VF3, the wild, the technology, and you brought up, and we just skirted that whole topic there, but the technology vehicle to vehicle, that's something that I'm excited to talk to somebody that would kind of know more about that. Cause it's not exclusive to EV, but that is a mindset of back to the VinFast culture, of the culture of an EV consumer. Is progressive, you know, and we talked about this, just who's an early adopter, who's a consumer, who's a late adopter that's like, okay, I get it. Now I'm sold because you've proven the product to me. And I think, like you said, the blank slate of VinFast, it's an opportunity, but it's also scary. Like you said, double-edged sword.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's gonna be interesting to see how that goes over time, right? It's like we're still leaning into those people that are going to be really open to hearing about some of that progressive technology. And I think we'll ease into some of them. So, I mean, again, and Sean, again, you guys are talking to your customers already about kind of where their interests lie. And I'm sure some are diving right in on that, but I'm sure others are just saying, hey, I just did a test drive with you guys at the Electrify Expo thing, and I just liked what you guys had. I didn't know anything about all this other stuff, you know? So
Yeah. What a cool experience that was to get out on COTA and ride around with some customers. What an interesting approach, too. Like, hey, you guys ever driven an EV? No? You want to put one on the racetrack? Even better. Let's do it. Yeah, right. Why not? Right.
And as they're going, it's like, what's this button for? It's like, that's for I-95. Yeah. Don't worry about that. You have to be driving
exactly,
right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, driver assist at COTA. You got Lewis Hamilton in your ear or something like that, at an F1 track. Sean, we're wrapping up here. Don't want to take too much of your time. You have another script that you got to read in front of people.
Sure.
And it's been really great, but combustion engine, are you a Chevy guy or what's your combustion choice right now?
I don't want to give a lame answer, but the lame answer is if it go fast, I like it. I mean, I have always enjoyed just the ingenuity that has evolved over a long time. I'm an engineer. I went to school to be a mechanical engineer, and I went to school to build race cars and spaceships. That's what I said in my mind. I'm going to go build a race car spaceship. You know, I don't know if that's a thing, but I'm going to make it a thing. That's
a vector, what I'm gonna do. By the way.
Yeah. And then I graduated, and like a global recession occurred, and I was like, I'm going to make whatever anyone will pay me to make. And I got to go on a different career path. But
Jared just totally gave you his age right there. I mean, you did some quick math and figured it out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I did it. Not calculus. That's easy math.
That's
there you go.
Yeah. No, but I have to ask because, you know, I've worked with kind of all the manufacturers and everybody, you know, I love Ford and seeing what they're doing and, you know, the GTD and the Mustang, that whole lineup. And, you know, even again, Mach-Es. And that's where I talk about just this whole conversation. It's really beautiful. Every one of these things. And Matt just gives such great insight on, you know, I say lovingly the nerd level, because that insight is, it's invaluable, that perspective, because I come in for the shiny, you know, fun things, but I'm wildly intrigued because I do have a 17-year-old son that's going to go off to college that is, you know, more technologically advanced than myself. And like I said, just cutting into the capability of the phone and the computers we're on. You're right there in the heart of it at CES. And obviously we'll see you are we going to see you at Electrify Expo? Do you know, Sean?
You're darn tootin'. I'll be there. I will absolutely be there. Yeah, that's going to be fun. Right. That was a great time. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Matt, anything else you want to say in closing as we sign off?
No, I think it's, again, Sean, thank you for taking the time. CES is a huge show. It's a busy show. Clearly, you had everything lumped onto you as you arrived. So thank you for taking the extra time to meet with us, obviously, and discuss the new product unveilings with VF3 and Wild and everything else. But I think the cool thing that we discussed today is you, again, as VinFast as a brand, what you're bringing to market and how you're approaching it. I love the idea of, again, that clean slate discussion we had. There's challenges amidst that, but also I think it opens up such a great opportunity for what we're showing to the public, which is there's a lot of great brands coming from the electrification conversation. And VinFast, as you mentioned, you're hearing your customers, you're improving, you're growing, you're making progress happen fast. So I'm just excited. I'm looking forward to seeing what you obviously bring the VF3 to market fast. I would love to see how VinFast can make that happen fast. I think you got some cool on your hands there. So great work.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, thank you so much, guys. It was an absolute riot catching up with you, and I look forward to catching up at the next one.
That's right. News team, unite. And you stay classy, VinFast. Okay? And if you see the 6'8", 7-foot wonder walking around CES or at any EV event, including Electrify Expo, which with their new expanded schedule, be sure to check out Electrify Expo. Sean Ackley, VinFast, thank you so much. All joking aside, no joke when it comes to VinFast. You guys move VinFast. So thank you so much for your time, education, and that mustache. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Have a great one. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Electrify podcast, brought to you by the creators of Electrify Expo. Be sure to catch full video episodes on YouTube at Electrify TV and follow along on social media for daily clips and more.